All right, everyone, the start of a brand new week on the Celtic Way. It's a morning briefing for Monday, the 22nd of April, with me, Hamish. We've got Tony and Ryan fresh from their visit to Hampden at the weekend. Fresh, is that the right word, guys? It takes a bit of getting over what happened on Saturday. It was manic. What was it like to actually be there, Tony? Or Ryan?
Do you want me to lead here, Tony? Yeah. I don't know about you, Tony, but I'm still recovering from that game as a whole. Football's absolutely mental. It is the craziest sport in the world. Celtic had to win that game three times on Saturday afternoon. I feel like I'm still getting over it. It was a manic 120 plus minutes at Hampden. Thankfully, Celtic came out on the other side as the victors, but it'll take a while to get over what went on in that game. Truly, as I wrote on the website that's on available today, it was a Jekyll and Hyde performance, both attacking and defending by Celtic.
Football never ceases to amaze you, does it? We were speaking off here just before we came on, and we said, could be worse, you could have woken up a Coventry City fan. You know, that's just the drama of football, isn't it? I mean, both semi-finals were excellent in their own way. I say that on the pod, that the after-match briefing, that that you give Aberdeen a lot of credit for coming and having a go and making it the spectacle that it was. If you're a Celtic supporter, it doesn't do much for your nerves, but you just think you've seen everything in football, don't you? But nah, no chance. Just never stops and ceases to amaze you. But, and it's only good when you're on the winning end of a penalty shootout. It's desperate when you lose. So, yeah, I think we've spoken Saturday. We kind of got away with one, but we'll dissect it, as you say, Hamish, in the headline, in the briefing.
Yeah. We'll do our best to do that anyway. There's a hell of a lot to chat about, and we can kind of look forward as well. First of all, delighted to have Weissman, a global leader in the boiler industry, sponsor this podcast. Their name at the top there, alongside Scotland's own award-winning installation team, MPH Boilers. Now, those two have teamed up. And when you choose a Weissman boiler that's installed by MPH at the moment, you'll get a free internet controller and your first year service for free. So it's your big chance to get world-class engineering alongside local expert service through Weissman and MPH Boilers. A big thanks to them for both sponsoring this video. Still get this going.
Certainly do, yeah. 6 months of access for a single pound plus a free Kyogo Furuhashi print from renowned football artist made by Frankie. On there this morning, there is a complete dissection of the game from myself. I spent all day yesterday compiling that, so it's available on the website if you want to have a wee look. There's Y-Scout annotated stills from the game showing both the good and bad points of Saturday. It was a very, very much a mixed bag game between Celtic and Aberdeen. So if you want to check that out, plus everything else that we've got going on the website, www.celticway.co.uk/subscribe, £1 for 6 months, and you'll get that free print.
Fabulous. My voice is a little in the wane, guys, so you two may be asked to do the majority of the talking today. How have your thoughts changed, if at all, since full-time on Saturday, Ryan?
I think I'm happier now than I was at the final whistle, to be honest with you, because I was more relieved when the final... when Joe Hart saved the penalty from Killian Phillips, I was absolutely relieved more than anything else. A sharp deep breath was emitted by myself in the press box, which thankfully meant that Celtic were through to the final. But yeah, I'm more happy now looking back on it. Yes, there were bad points of the game, in which I'm sure we'll touch upon. I can actually hear myself in the background there, Tony. I don't know if you're if your computer's playing through it once again, but. Just in general, I'm more delighted now than I was at the game. And yes, Celtic are in the final. They'll be playing Rangers in the final at Glasgow Derby on the 25th of May. It sounds pretty good to me.
The perfect end to Joe Hart's career, perhaps. If Saturday's anything to go by, that's going to be pretty eventful, I would say. Folk are not going to enjoy me saying this, but I have the strongest suspicions, based on nothing but fate, that that isn't the last penalty shootout we're going to get this season. I just have this really weird feeling that the final, with it being Joe Hart's final game, might go that way. Time will tell, Tony.
There's every chance. You wouldn't put it past Celtic and Rangers to cancel each other out in that final, would you? So, yeah, 25th of May, date synonymous with the club. It's and I think the manager said it himself on Saturday, semi-finals are all about booking your place in the final. Doesn't matter how you do it, but my goodness, the Celtic team put the fans through the emotional ringer, didn't they? And, as I said before, Celtic did have to go and win that game three times. And, but you felt at one point with the two last-minute equalisers, both in normal time and extra time, that it was going to be Aberdeen's day. I think a lot of Celtic supporters would have had that feeling. But and then when Hart slams a penalty off the post, you think, oh, no way, this is just not happening. But, you know, again, they found a way. So good on them for that. It's probably as I said on Saturday, that's probably the silver lining at the end of a titanic struggle like that, that they got into the final. And that's the most pleasing aspect of it all.
I think that's it for me. I mean, this team, it's been a kind of tough season. You look at last season, guys. Last season was perfect domestically. Celtic were perfect. I know we lost a couple of games near the end and that, but, you know, the team were pretty much perfect last season. This season has been, you know, miles from being perfect. Right from the start, we've been faced with challenges. And in a weird way, the weekend was kind of the season in microcosm in terms of, you know, the ups, the downs, the team fighting back and eventually winning. And hopefully that, you know, repeats itself with the overall season. For me at this stage... for me, I'll let you come in a wee second. For me at this stage, I think just embrace this Celtic team and what it is. This is not going to be perfect between now and the end of the season. I think we're going to have a number of similar matches to the weekend between now and the end of the season. But just try and enjoy the chaos, embrace the chaos, as someone said, and watch this Celtic team who have their weaknesses and have their limits in certain positions. Watch them dig in. They're a team of winners, and watch them repeat that or show that between now and the end of the season. There's so much to be picked up on, Tony. For me, the stuff about positions of players, etc., that's for the summer. For now, dig in and enjoy and try and enjoy this.
My only concern, Hamish, was that performance is still in Celtic. Just when we all thought, yep, get the bit between the teeth, they're going to go to Hampden, put on a show. They did put on a show, but not the one we all thought. And that's what makes you turn around and you say today, this league ain't over by any stretch of the imagination. I never thought it was. Lots of people were saying when Rangers lost to Ross County, drew with Dundee, that was it. It's a done deal. It is very far from a done deal. I'm not buying anything into that. The noises that were coming from the other side of the city then. And also, I think if you're Celtic, you keep a low profile. Unlike a certain Cyril Dessers yesterday, who I believe told the BBC and all and sundry that, you know, Rangers will prove that they're the best team in the league. So, yeah, fine. I think, you know, these things do your team talk for you, don't they, really? When will players learn? And I mean players of any club. You know, I remember Jack and Marcus said that Celtic were going to win the league, and I wasn't particularly chuffed with him then. Ange Postecoglou said he's a grown man, he can say what he likes. Celtic did win the league. You always felt that they would, but because that team was functioning, like you say. But I just think, right, okay, I'm going to embrace the chaos, and I'm going to enjoy watching this team over the next five games, because I think, Saturday was hopefully a blip in those five games, but they still won. They found a way. So there's something in that team, as you say, that they're winners and they can get it over the line by hook or by crook. So that's what I'll enjoy most.
I don't necessarily think it's a bad thing in a weird way that it wasn't a perfect performance at the weekend. And it's maybe just a reminder to the players that, you know, if that had been a league game, would have been a couple of points dropped. And, you know, we are only 3 points clear and have some big games to go. So I'm prepared to give them the team on Saturday. It wasn't our best performance. It's a game we should have won, as Ryan says, in you know, normal time. We should certainly have won it in extra time. We eventually won it on penalties. We found a way to win. That's what semi-finals are about. But I have no doubt that, you know, Brendan Rodgers, Callum McGregor, etc. this week will be saying, look, there's a reminder, you know, nothing's won yet, we've still got a long way to go. It could be a memorable end to the season, but it's only going to be a memorable end to the season if we find a better level than we did at the weekend. But I just think the fact that they were able to win that, just finally, people talk about penalties as being a lottery. For me, you know, far from it. Penalties for me are you know, sign and a test of players' character, their mettle. And I thought the penalties we took at the weekend were brilliant as well, Joe Hart aside.
Yeah, absolutely. Penalty issues, what penalty issues? Because Celtic, all of their outfield players scored penalties. I mean, don't know why Tomoki Iwata's not been on penalties earlier on this season, because that was a stunning penalty from him.
None of them, faffed around with it. None of them tried to be too clever. They all just put it in a side.
I liked Alistair Johnston's penalty as well, and I'm sure he did as well. You can see it from his reaction when he scored. He was relieved, but he was buzzing at the same time. Just thought they were really, really professional penalties. Adam Ida showing character, taking the first penalty, stepping up. Palmer, who gave away the ball that forced extra time in the first place, stepping up. Him on Instagram saying that he's not at the levels that he wants to be for a multitude of reasons. Hopefully he can get them sorted both on and off the pitch. I liked his response on Instagram, and I wanted to bring that up. I thought that was important. And I think that's quite mature from a player that has been struggling as of late. You know, his performances haven't been great, but at least he knows that, and he's working his hardest to get back to where he was, because, you know, October, November time, he was arguably Celtic's best player. But him stepping up and taking a penalty, Ida stepping up. Four of the penalty kick takers were subs. So that shows the character that they've got coming off of the bench. You know, they might have not even been acclimatised to the game, or they might have been fitter than other players, or it's a different scenario coming off the bench than starting it and playing for the full 120 minutes, then stepping up and taking a penalty. Shows character from them all that they're able to go up and take a penalty, and not one of them let the side down. Really good penalties apart from Joe Hart, and even then I think he's trying to take it to one side, because and Rodgers said this as well, because Kelleher-Roos was injured. That was one of the wildest things I think I've seen in a penalty shootout. And I seen Emi Martinez get sent off during the week for Aston Villa against Lille. You know, a player actually going down with an injury during a penalty shootout. It was quite surreal, but it was that sort of game, wasn't it?
Before his own player was about to take one, though, as well. Like, I found that totally bizarre from
didn't that player miss it as well, Ryan Duncan? Ryan Duncan,
yeah.
Didn't he miss
it? And then Hart had the chance to win it after that. Our penalties were good, Tony.
Well, they were excellent. I mean, it shows your bottle and nerve to take it. And we mentioned the point that four of the guys that took the penalties were substitutes. So fair play to them. And they were all textbook. And Joe Hart's unlucky. I mean, he's cast it off the post. I mean, that's, you know, it's granted he missed it. But people are like, why was he taking a penalty? He was explained why he was taking a penalty, because they were practicing penalties on Thursday and Friday. And Cameron Carter-Vickers says he hadn't missed one. And I think he'd taken one before for Manchester City and scored, didn't he, in a Europa League
friendly.
Clash? Or a friendly, sorry, yeah. So, yeah, so, listen, he was confident enough to step up. I'm not going to have a go at any player that steps up in that situation and takes a penalty. And if they miss, because that's part of football. You see, it's not a lottery. There's an art and a skill to it as well, taking a penalty and holding your nerve and the whole situation. My goodness, I think that's a dog walker coming again, but there you go. And but those guys kept their cool superbly well, didn't they? And I think everybody had a sharp intake when Adam Ida went up, a sharper intake when Lewis Palmer went up, when they saw Tomoki Iwata again up, when Alistair Johnston, they were thinking, oh my goodness. And then when Joe Hart went up, they were just like, what's happening? You know, their nerves were frazzled and frayed, but Joe Hart apart, every other penalty was really good. So kudos to that, and well done Celtic for practicing penalties as well. They didn't go into that cold. So I'm happy about that. I'll turn this off.
I think you're right. I mean, the quality of the penalties was really good. Especially, I mean, you could kind of credit them all, but especially I thought when it went to sudden death and you had, I think it was Johnson first, wasn't it? And then Iwata, the fact that both of them went up and were so confident. I think that's, you know, that bodes well for not necessarily another penalty shootout, as much as I've said there will be one. It just bodes well for pressure moments. I think that the fact they've been, I always think when you're so close to something like that, like failure, basically, which it would have been if we'd have lost at the weekend, and you come through that, it's really good. And we've had a lot of those moments this season where things were about to go against us and we've scored late goals or one penalty shootout. So I personally feel more confident now about the prospect of a double than I did on Friday. And I know that might be obvious because we're a round further, etc. But I just think the team coming through, that's a really big sign. I think we'll look back on Saturday at the end of the season. I want to go through some comments, guys. You can chip in at any stage if you want. They cover a wide range of topics. Stephen saying we concede far too easily at the back. Now, I personally don't want to go into the negatives too much. You guys may feel, you know, slightly differently, which is absolutely fine. The goals we conceded were disappointing. I mean, the second and third goals were really similar. What have either of you got any thoughts on where the fault lies for that? Was it in not closing Junior Hoylett down? Was it in the defending at the back post? Is it something we should be really worried about, the fact that we couldn't see out to Leeds going into the closing stages? Or is it just, was it just a frantic cup tie?
It's a mixture of everything, Hamish. Sorry, Brian. Alistair Johnston has to do better to try and cut those crosses out and not let them. Because, you know, you get a warning with the first one. We lost two identical goals, right? And Palmer losing the ball as well doesn't help. Switching off, you can keep the ball. It's the ball retention. It's see it out. And also as well, and I'll say this till I'm, you know, obviously blue in the face, but I will say it till I'm blue in the face. See my central defenders. See when the ball's in the air. See my goalkeeper when it's flung up like that. Come and win it in the air. Scales was caught underneath both of them. I mean, and you know, and even Cameron Carter-Vickers as well. I want my centre-halves to go and challenge for that, or your goalkeeper to come out and punch everything, because he's a protected species. Anybody goes into him, he's getting a foul, isn't he? And it's the last minute of a football match, so you need somebody to be domineering in that area. You know, just look and kind of judge. The guy's shaping up to put in a cross. There's every chance it's going to come in and go to the back post, because that's what you'll be looking for, somebody coming in. Contest it. Twice it went in and nobody contested. That's what really gets to me. It shouldn't have got, Cross shouldn't have been able to come in the first place if Still Johnson is doing it right. Lewis Palmer doesn't give the ball away as well. They don't get the chance to attack. But Celtic defence watched this, a carbon copy happen once in the last minute of normal time, and then to compound it in the last minute of extra time. Once is careless, twice, as I say, is bordering on criminal. And you want certain people to do their jobs. I'm looking at the goalkeeper, Carter Vickers and Scales. Go and contest that. It's your ball to win. And I can't understand for life me why they didn't.
I wonder if Hart had that one earlier on in the half in his mind, you know, where he came for it and kind of missed it and Aberdeen nearly scored. I wonder if that was in his mind. Again, feel free to chime in, Ryan. Stephen, talking about Yang, had a few comments. You know, for me, and this just isn't based off the weekend, Yang's someone who I personally think, you know, we should be looking at a loan for next season. I don't think he's there yet. I know he had that wee kind of purple patch where everyone kind of got a bit excited about him. For me, I'd be looking to get him out on loan next season. I think there's a talent there, or there is talent. I think there's a talented player there somewhere. Not convinced it's all there for him right now to be, certainly not to be starting cup semi-finals for Celtic.
No, the first 45 minutes in particular were absolutely dreadful from Yang. He just wasted the ball whenever he was on it. Didn't look confident in beating his man whatsoever. Played like, and Alan Morrison said this in one of his articles a couple of weeks ago, played like a schoolboy, unfortunately, on the wing. Looked like a fish out of water in the semi-final. A player that's had success previously against Aberdeen earlier on in the season, that 6-0 win. Thought he was one of the best players on the park. Just, I don't know if it's the red card that's knocked the stuffing out of him, totally made him go off form, but something's clicked or something's not clicked, which is the reason why he's not on form at the moment. I do agree with you. I think he will need a loan deal. Where that will be to, I'm not so sure. Maybe, I don't know, a St Mirren, a Motherwell. I don't know if he's at the level to play for an Aberdeen or a Hibs just yet. You know, quite inconsistent. But there's definitely avenues for him to go. I would like to see him closer to home. I wouldn't want to send him to you know, somewhere far out or back to South Korea or whatever. I want to see him closer to home so that he can get acclimatised, because there is a talent there. We've seen it before. We've seen it in flashes that he can beat a man. He's quite tall for a winger as well. So you'd be wanting to use his physical attributes, but he looks quite lightweight at the moment. I think a loan deal akin to the way Ryan Christie or Christopher Ayer went out on loan could be the making of a player like him. It's happened to an extent for Kwon. I know he's been in and out of the St Mirren squad in recent weeks, but I think a player like Jan could take Scottish football by storm if he gets the correct loan to a St Mirren, a Motherwell, a Kilmarnock or something like that. If these teams are looking for a winger that can come in and wants to really prove a point, then I think Jan could do a job for one of these teams. Just touching on I don't want to touch on the negatives too much, but you know, that goal happens one time, and I get that it's a mistake, but it happens twice, and it's a pattern. There's a pattern in that goal. They attacked Scales twice because they've seen Scales, and this is a team that had Scales on loan last season. They've seen him as a weak link in that box, so they targeted him twice. Esther Sockler and Angus McDonald both got the better of Scales. I don't know. I'm thankful of what Scales has done in this season. Especially coming in when there was an emergency at centre back. It was either him or Nat Phillips, and I didn't want it to be Nat Phillips. Now, Navrovsky played the last game, kept a clean sheet. I don't understand why Brendan Rodgers changed it for a semi-final. You know, look, he kept a clean sheet the week before, and then they've conceded three goals due to maybe one of the reasons being due to changing the centre back pairing. I don't know, is it goodwill that Scales has got? Is Scales actually Celtic's second best defender at the club at this point in time? For me, no. And I think they need to strengthen in that area regardless. Whether that be Mike Navrovsky coming in and being the number two centre-back alongside Carter Vickers, or going out and signing a centre-back. It's been an area that's been a problem all season due to injury and off form. And I think Starfelt becomes a better player every week since this season has went on. To be honest, he's just been... I think the past 3-4 weeks have been a bit of a disaster for Scales, to be honest.
He's obviously getting a lot of criticism after the weekend. The point I would make about that is that, you know, you look at our entire back line, plus Joe Hart at the weekend, and I thought they all had errors in them. I agree, generally, next season I'd be looking for an upgrade in Liam Scales, but that's something I'd said prior to the weekend.
Yeah, I think, I mean, that's no surprise. I think everybody's willing to contest that the Liam Scales experiment is kind of over, isn't it? Those deficiencies in his game are being cruelly exposed, and they were cruelly exposed and laid bare at Hampden on Saturday. But, you know, you're talking about, I thought the manager got three calls wrong on Saturday. I thought Scales was the wrong call, I thought McGregor was the wrong call, and Yang was the wrong call. And it showed, because a lot of Celtic's problems stemmed from those three players just not functioning or performing at all. But, you know, that's the team he chose to start. And it became apparent that even when he couldn't equalise, Celtic still hadn't started. And that was 22 minutes into the match. Celtic were still well off it. And, you know, so you look at certain players and it's criticisms per se, but you're observing what you're seeing. And I think Yang at times, and say that on Saturday, Yang looked like a boy playing men's football. And that shouldn't really happen. He really did. And it was one of the worst performances from an offensive Celtic player that I've ever seen at Hampden. And I don't say that lightly, because there's been some shockers at Hampden, but just there was no outlet there. He couldn't keep the ball. He didn't give you any kind of attacking threat. and he didn't do the defensive shift. And he's clearly not learned from what happened at Ibrox with Matondo. He just wasn't tracking back at all. So, you know, a lot of problems were being caused by the fact that Yang was, wasn't he just off it? He was woefully off it. And then I'd written during the week that it was the game for James Forrest. And within seconds of James Forrest coming on, he's made a mazy run and he smacked one that Aberdeen have desperately cleared. And then the next thing he does is go on a similar mazy run and bang one into the bottom corner. So why
he's great for the third goal as well, wasn't he?
Correct. So why he never started Forrest is beyond me as well. Because this is supposedly, in Brendan's words, the best winger at the club. So, you know, horses for courses, Hamish. I just felt that Yang nor Palmer didn't do anything to merit starting that game on Saturday. And, you're kind of proven right on that one, because Forrest came on and he had a wonderful impact on that match, which he wanted him to do. So, yeah, Scales, I think everybody's been saying it for a while now that there are deficiencies in his game, and Celtic certainly need an upgrade. And, you're not going in studs up on them. But if there's criticism to be had, and there's lots of criticism to be had about Saturday, because it wasn't, as you say, a perfect match, and they could easily have lost that than win it, and a lot of it was self-inflicted and basic stuff. Seeing a game out in the last minute, basic defending, you know, stopping crosses from coming in, contesting high balls. I can bow to the fact if Aberdeen had scored some wonderful footballing goals, they didn't. The first goal was decent. There was great movement from Majovski. But again, the two central defenders are lying square and flat. Got caught flat-footed 2 minutes. Cold. You know, just be switch on. Switch on. You know, you're at Hampden. Switch on and switch on for 90 minutes and beyond. They fell asleep in the first 5 minutes and fell asleep in the last minutes of both normal time and extra time. You know, you're still lucky to be in the cup. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, as I say, it wasn't just Liam Scales on Saturday. Cameron Carter-Vickers had, you know, one of his poorest games for a while, caught out badly. For me, very fortunate not to give a penalty away. People might have their own opinions on what happened before that with Hoylett and Johnson in the air. I wonder why the referee played on. Anyway, because it was a decision that went for us, we don't need to spend the next 10 minutes dissecting it, guys. We can just go, they even themselves out, we're always told, so we'll see what happens. Right, just go through some more comments. John saying, Saturday wasn't good for the health at all. Don't want to be negative, but that was a poor performance, especially in defence. Hearts or our City rivals win that game. Not sure. I mean, Rangers and Hearts, I don't think are up to much either. But yeah, it wasn't ideal from us at the weekend. Johnny Boy saying it's important to remember that football is an entertainment business and Saturday was pure entertainment, embrace the chaos. It was a really entertaining match, certainly crazy everything that happened in it. My Ball saying they enjoyed the semi-final. Steve getting in touch, had we won comfortably on Saturday, our players and fans may have subconsciously assumed that the next six games would be straightforward. Now we know that it will take a massive effort over every second. As I say, it might not be a bad reminder at all. Keep coming back to it, guys. The fact we're able to win that game, I think, is an immense tribute to the team. Because we were speaking last week about games at Hampden when things go wrong. A number of years ago, that was the kind of afternoon when things would have gone wrong. But, you know, this team, you can throw in the cup final against Hearts in 2020, the 3-3 one that went to penalties and we came out on top. And this kind of squad, I know the players have changed a little bit, but they find a way to win now at Hampden, even when not at their best. And I think that's huge. Marchie Boy saying our mentality is better than them, but we now need to show it. Stephen has been messaging mad about Bojan Miovski. Comparing him to Ida and saying if there was a choice there, who would you sign? I think Miovski's a great player. Again, Saturday didn't really tell me anything I didn't know, but his knack of scoring big goals in the big occasions is something we should really take a look at. I don't think it's going to happen now, guys. I think he'll probably head to Italy somewhere like that and probably have a pretty good career. January was probably the time to sign him, but he's a really talented player, I think. There was no doubt when he went through that he wasn't going to score that. I think if it had been someone else, there would have been even a few Rangers forwards, you would have been kind of like, all right. But when Miovski was through, you kind of knew he was scoring.
He's got that knack, hasn't he? He's got the knack of scoring. He's been scoring all season, albeit he's had a bit of a barren run at the moment. But obviously scored, so you know he's there for the big moments. He scored against Celtic previously, both last season and this season. So he's got that track record of scoring. It's one of these ones where would Celtic have forked out the money for Miovski in January? It seems that they were happy to bring Idan on a loan deal. Is he a player that wants to play second fiddle to Kyogo? I'm not so sure. If you brought him in the summer, would he be the number one striker at the club, or would it still be Kyogo? Then Kyogo. Again, I'm not sure. It would still be Kyogo. So if there was a deal to be done between Aberdeen and Celtic and a way of getting that price tag down, because I'm sure it's quite a sizeable price tag, and I don't think Celtic would be paying 6-7 million for a player from the Scottish Premiership unless they were like next level. And I know that Miovski's a good striker, but I don't think he's an elite striker or anything like that. I think he's got a lot of potential in his game, still plenty of upsides, still plenty of things he can improve upon, but he will improve upon. I think a move to Italy for him would be brilliant, and I think he'd get goals in Italy because he's that sort of cultured striker. If Celtic were to go in and inquire for him, I'd be looking to maybe send O the other way as well as some money. O's not getting game time. He's hardly even making the bench nowadays due to Adam Ida. I don't know if Aberdeen would be interested in the striker, but I've got no doubt that O, if you give O the chances that Miovski has for Aberdeen, you know, and the game time that he would have at Aberdeen, I think he would score quite a few goals for Aberdeen. He's still only 22 years old and he can improve. I'd like to see him, you know, much like his countryman and Yang, close to home, seeing him in the domestic league and seeing him thriving. I don't even know, maybe even put a buyback clause if he was. I know loads of teams do that. I'm just being hypothetical here, but I would take Miovski at Celtic, but I don't think he'd be the first choice, is what I'm trying to say.
I think that's the difficulty right now. It's finding a space for him, because Kyogo's going to be there next season. I personally think Ida's going to be there, always going to be there at the start of the season anyway. Is there room for another forward? I'm guessing most people will say yes, we should sign one, but genuinely, if we play one up top, is there room for another forward, Tony?
Listen, you can't get enough good players in your team. I'm always of the opinion that, listen, it'll come down to the fact that if Celtic want Miovski or Ida, they're going to have to go and ask the question, and they're going to have to pay a premium to land them. So we'll see how much their interest is, or how high their interest is in these guys in the summer. Brendan's really excited to work with Adam Ida. He did a few things. We spoke about it last week. You can see Adam Ida being a future Celtic striker because of the things he did. But Miovski just seems to impress you. And he's a big game player. Turns up in big games, doesn't he? Scores big goals. Mm-hmm. And people say he's not tried and tested in Europe. He scored a couple of European goals for Aberdeen. So yeah, what more do you need? He scores goals domestically too. And yeah, I think players like Adam Ida and Bojan Miovski would improve with better players around them. And when you're a Celtic striker, you will score goals. So there is no two ways about that. I'd be inclined to say if we really are interested in both of those strikers, I would sign them as well, because I think you need at least three strikers for a serious assault on whatever European competition you find yourself in. And if it's going to be the new formatted Champions League, then go and do it. The money is there, and just keep everybody in that squad next season on their toes, where if you fall below a certain level, there is somebody coming in and they're breathing down your neck to make you produce your best for them. And I would certainly embrace signing three strikers.
I think just quickly, I think me personally, I think it'll be either one or the other. It'll be either or Miovski.
Who would you go for? For the same price.
Difficult one. If they're the same price, that's really, really difficult because they both bring different things. I think there's a higher ceiling with either, but I think you're going to get more immediate results with Miovski. And I know that's quite weird to say because Ida has been scoring goals. Yeah. Look at his goal record.
Seven goals.
Since he joined. You'd probably side with Ida. The only way that Celtic are going to get, in my opinion, if they get Ida and Miovski, is if Kyogo leaves. That would be the only way that I think both of those players would be at the club at the same time. Because I think it would just be, and I'm all for getting a strong squad, but I think it'd be just a tad too bloated up front. You'd have so many players to try and keep happy. So you would have to probably lose a player like Kyogo in order to facilitate all of those players. In an ideal world, you'd have them all, but I just think, you know, it'd be very, very difficult to keep everybody happy in that, in a position that they only play one player in.
Yeah, it's maybe one we can revisit tomorrow, guys. Just finally, Pierce saying, I do think Saturday was mentally massive for this team. Had we lost that, I could have seen it scaring the team into the League Cup. Football is all about progression. See Real Madrid last week. Right, six games to go.
Before we go, Hamish, it's 5 years since Caesar died. McBillan O'Neill, yes. 5th year anniversary of his sad, sad passing. And just an iconic and colossus captain of the Lisbon Lions. And I just wanted to share a story with you. You might have heard it, you might have read it, but on the day he died, Bertie Auld and John Clark were put up to speak about Billy McNeil. And my dealings with him weren't frequent because he was a columnist for a rival tabloid newspaper, so I spent my kind of career not dealing with the likes of Billy McNeil as opposed to other Lisbon Lions. And I don't regret it. I just think it's a shame that I never got to know him. But John Clark sat down, and John Clark's not a man of many words, but a wonderful man and a humble man. And he told a great story. He said that when he was Billy McNeil's assistant, when Billy McNeil first took over at Celtic, they travelled down to Watford to scout a player in Vicarage Road, in a kind of housing estate in Watford, and they couldn't find the ground. And a big fancy motor went past them and just stopped dead where they were. Big Billy was driving, and the electric windows have gone down. And they both look out, and it's Elton John. And Elton John says, "You're Billy McNeil." And he's like, "Yes, I'm Billy McNeil." And John Clark's like, just looking. And Elton John says, "What are you doing down here?" He says, "We're going to the game." And he went, "Can't find the ground. Follow me." And he took them in and he gave them the AAA, everything. Just like he walked in and he was like, "That's Billy McNeil and John Clark, they're Lisbon Lions." And he was so excited, right? He put them in the box, he gave them the best seats, told the staff to look after them. And John Clark turns to Billy McNeil and says, "Do you know Elton John?" He's like, "Nah, just run with it." And John Clark was saying, it didn't matter where Billy McNeil went, everybody knew Billy McNeil. He said, just like, it was incredible. He said, and Elton John was so enthusiastic, and he spoke to them for ages about the Lisbon Lions and watching Celtic win the European Cup. And they never even bothered with the Watford game. Elton John was just so, so excited, because he loved his football, Elton John. Very knowledgeable. And John Clark said, just surreal moment in life. And they just said, but it was just still everybody. He said this about Billy McNeil lifting the European Cup. And he said, in my opinion, that image is still the best ever photograph of a captain lifting a trophy. That photograph of Billy standing on the podium overlooking the stadium. I genuinely don't think there's been a captain of any team that has been presented with a trophy like that. Usually cups are presented to a team and all the players are alongside their captain. And they are jumping up and down like mad celebrating. We were about 200 yards away in the dressing room when it happened, but it is still one of the best and most outstanding memories. It is one of the best photographs ever of a captain winning and lifting a cup. In fact, for me, it's arguably one of the best sporting and iconic photographs of all time. I don't think you can dispute that, can you? On a day like today, I don't think you can dispute that. It is the picture, isn't it? It's the defining picture in Celtic's history.
That's what I was going to say. There's not another photo that comes close. If you said, you know, show me a photo that sums up what Celtic are about winning, you know, he just looks imperious up there on his own. And there's obviously a backstory to the reason why he was up on his own and all of that stuff. But he just looks magnificent, so strong. I love it. It's amazing. And I think, you know, a great story there as well. Blake was just asking, you know, did Simunovic not score wearing his number in a specific minute after his death too? That's still one of the most remarkable things ever as well, that Samirovic scored wearing the number 5 jersey in the 67th minute a few days after Billy McNeil sadly died. Like, it's I don't believe in fate too much, to be honest, but stuff like that, that makes you wonder, doesn't it?
It certainly does, and I believe that Simonovic gifted his top to the family of Billy McNeil, including his widow, after the game. Pound for pound, my favourite ever sort of Celtic legend, Billy McNeil, just an absolute legend. And that statue at Celtic Park on the Celtic Way is just absolutely incredible. It takes your breath away every time you see it.
Amazing. Great stuff. A lovely way to finish as well. Billy McNeil missed every day, I would say, with regards to Celtic, but what a hell of a legacy he left behind. Thanks, guys, for your time once again. Just a final shout-out for this before we go. 6 months of access for a single pound, and you get a free Kyogo Furuhashi print from renowned football artist made by Frankie. Maybe in the future, made by Frankie, will get on a Billy McNeil one as well. That would be even more amazing than Kyogo. We love you as well, Kyogo, don't get me wrong. Guys, thanks for your time. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in. Back this time tomorrow.
Cheers, guys.